and welcome to Effective Parenting. In just a moment, you're going to experience an insightful seminar presented by Dr. Scott Taransky and Joanne Miller. This seminar was presented before a live audience of adults and teens. The focus of the conference is honor. This material is also contained in their new book, Say Goodbye to Whining, Complaining, and Bad Attitudes in You and Your Kids. In this first session, Scott and Joanne discuss some very common problems in family life and how honor can dramatically improve how your whole family relates together. Let's join Scott and Joanne as they begin this session.
About this session that we're going to teach you tonight, because we're going to share with you an idea that we've been working on for many years now, and it's taken us a while to figure out exactly what it is and then to define it and then to figure out how to communicate it to families so that it can be helpful for you. And it's taken us a long time to do that. I think we've on our way, at least, in trying to communicate this idea to you. So we're going to have a fun time tonight. When you get a grasp of this idea and put it in practice in your family, it will change the way your family interacts with one another. We call this idea honor.
It's a different concept, and so we hope that you'll stick with us for 3 weeks and soak it all in, because we can't communicate everything we'd like to say in 1 week. But let me give you a story. Mike was 12 years old, had his first lawn mowing job, and he was across the street pushing the lawnmower as Grandpa sat on the porch. When Mike took a break, Grandpa said to Mike, "Come on over here and sit with me for a minute." Mike came over and sat next to Grandpa. And as he sat there, Grandpa said, "Let me tell you something. If you want to be successful, then I want to tell you what you can do. Do your job well and then do something extra. And then just watch what the response will be." Oh, Mike thought that was a great idea. So he went back over there and continued to push that lawnmower until he got done. And then he grabbed the broom and swept the walk, which wasn't required. It was something extra. While he did that, he looked at Grandpa and gave him that little smile as they exchanged the eyes with each other. When Mike was all done, he went to the neighbor and knocked on the door. The neighbor came out and checked the work and was delighted to see that he had not only mowed the lawn, but he'd also swept the walk. He ended up giving Mike a tip. Mike's eyes just kind of grew, and he was pleased not only because of the extra money, but also because he knew he'd done something special. Grandpa chose that opportunity, that teachable moment, to teach his grandson Mike a very special idea and concept about life. It has to do with honor, doing more than what's expected.
My name is Joanne Miller, and I'm going to share just a minute about my family. My husband is Ed. I have a son, David, who is 13, and I have a son, Timothy, who's 10. And I'll be sharing some stories this evening about how honor has affected our family. But first, I want to tell you a story about another family. We'll call the mom Samantha. Now, Samantha is a single parent. Single parenting has a number of special challenges associated with it. It's a difficult job to be a single parent. And Samantha came to us for counseling because things were not going too well in her relationship with her children. She had two children, and there was just continual fighting in the home. Mom was yelling at the kids were yelling at mom, the kids were yelling at each other. It was just a struggle. Whenever she wanted them to do something, it was like a tug of war. They were having a hard time in their relationship. So Samantha and the children came to us for counseling, and we met with them week after week. And over a period of time, we shared with them some of the ideas that we're going to share with you tonight. And it brought some real changes in their family. So we got to the point where Samantha came in and sat in our office and said, "You know, I think we're ready to be done with counseling. I can't believe how different things are in our family. The way we relate is so different now than it used to be." And we smile because we've heard that over and over again. People come back and they put these things into practice in their family, and they see change. And so we're going to share with you some principles tonight, some practical ideas that you can take home, put into practice in your family, and we believe you will see those same changes in your family.
My name is Scott Taransky. My wife is Carrie. We have five children, and our youngest will turn 13 this year. So we'll have five teenagers all at the same time. And it is a fun time. It's the best time that we could be having with our lives. I mean, these kids are great. On Monday, we were playing basketball in the front yard. Then we came in and did some weightlifting, and we were doing some stretching. We'd never done that before. But, you know, we're kind of doing this health thing as a family. The dinnertime conversations are a riot with teens. We're having a great time as we talk about ethical dilemmas. Is it ever okay to lie? You know, and boy, we got a debate going between our teenagers. It's just such a fun time of life. We believe that in part the fun that we're enjoying right now with our kids has to do with this whole idea of honor. And that's what we want to communicate to you. What makes honor change a whole family dynamic? And we want to share that with you. There's one family we dealt with, Pat and Carla. And they had a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old that continually bickered all the time. It was the sarcasm. It was the dirty looks. It was the foot out, you know, as somebody's going by. It was the nudging on the, or it was sometimes just a sound from the mouth that the other one knew what they meant. And it was a, you know, they were fighting. And we started taking apart the family dynamic, started looking at the various ingredients, the way they interacted in their family. And as we did that, we took it apart and started putting it back together with honor strands in place of those dishonoring ones. It was fun when Dad said finally, you know, I can't believe it. We can actually take a ride in the car without a fight. It's an enjoyable time. And that's what we're looking to share with you in the next 3 sessions. We want you to know about honor because honor changes the way a family interacts, changes the way they treat other people, and then changes the way they treat others outside of the family.
Now, most parents recognize the value of teaching their children to follow instructions, but few go so far as to teach their children honor. We say that following instructions is doing what you're told, but honor is going beyond that. It's the attitude of how you do something that's important. We say that honor is treating people special, doing more than what's expected, and having a good attitude. Honor is the way that people do the things that they do. People develop habits and patterns of relating. Honor affects those patterns and those habits in a positive way.
We've had several readers read our book, and one person was reading it in a doctor's office, and someone looked at the book and said, "Oh, that's impossible. Getting rid of whining, complaining, and bad attitudes. You can't get rid of whining, complaining, and bad attitudes unless you get rid of your kids." But we believe that you can, and we're going to share with you some very practical ways you can work with your children to impart honor into your family. Now, before we give you some practical ideas, I just want to give you more of a vision for what this is. So let's ask a question here. What does it mean to be a good employee? The good employee isn't the one who can just get the job done. The employee is often the one who adds something to the working environment, that looks for something that needs to be done and does it without being asked. That is a good employee. See, that's honor. Now, when we work with our children and teach them to be honoring as they're growing up, they're going to be successful employees. What's an excellent student? A student isn't someone who can just do the task. It's often the one who adds a little extra to their term paper. Someone who makes learning a joy and even teaching a joy for the teacher. That's honor. See, when children learn honor, they learn how to be better employees. They learn how to be better students. They learn how to be better friends to other people. But most importantly, they learn some very important skills that they will perpetuate in their own family as their children get older.
Teaching children to follow instructions is important because when children learn how to follow instructions, it deals with some of the selfishness in their own heart. It teaches them to come quickly when they're called, to do what they're asked to do. It deals with that selfishness that's within them, and that's important. But when we teach children honor, it goes one step further. It talks about how the job is done, the attitude that it's done with, the heart attitude, what's going on inside the child as the job is being done.
The quality we're talking about is honor. Honor makes it work smoothly. Honor deals with not doing the task, but how the task is done. The word how is very important there. In 2 weeks, we're going to talk about what we call the network factor. It's a term that we coined, but essentially what we're saying is that there is a hidden fabric of rules in every family, of how they operate, how people communicate, how they deal with emotions, how they deal with conflict, how they make decisions, how they rest, how they relax. All of these things, there's rules about how those take place, and they're hidden. You can't see them. What we do is we bring them to the forefront so that we can pick them apart, analyze them, because honor talks about the way that people interact. So those unwritten rules about how a family interacts can be adjusted. We're going to spend the whole third time talking about how to do that in a family. Now, we're talking about honor. Honor means surprising others by thinking of their needs and desires above your own. It means acting and talking in a manner that pleases others even when they're not around. Honor means treating people special, doing more than what's expected, and having a good attitude.
Honor helps a 4-year-old know how to ask for a snack without whining and complaining. Honor helps a 7-year-old know how to accept no for an answer when she's told she can't wear the same shirt for the 3rd day in a row. Okay, honor helps the 13-year-old know how to talk to mom graciously when he disagrees, or the 17-year-old know how to talk to dad when he doesn't like what he's being asked to do. Now, how are our children going to know how to respond in these situations unless we teach them? So that's what we're going to talk about. Now, we're going to do a little scenario here for you. Imagine that I'm Wendy, I'm a single mom, and this is my son, Tom. He's 14 years old, and I'm frustrated because I've got a lot of work to do around the house, and he's supposed to be doing his chores, okay? Tom, I'm frustrated about the chores you're supposed to be doing.
I don't understand what the problem is. I do what you tell me to do.
Well, that's just a problem. I always have to tell you when the trash is full and has to be taken out. I have to remind you when it's Thursday to take the cans to the street. I wish you could just see what needs to be done and do it without me telling you.
I don't understand what the big deal is.
Well, it's not just the trash. You make yourself a snack and you leave the counter all messy and sticky. I have to clean up after you around the house, dishes and plates around. I wish you could just see what has to be done and do it without me telling you. Am I making some sense here? Are you with me? Do you understand what I'm saying? He's not a bad kid, but there's something missing here.
I have no idea what she's talking about. After all, I'm a good kid. I get my work done at school. When my mom tells me something to do, I do it. But now it's as if she's trying to get me to do something different. It's as if she's trying to get me to think differently.
Maybe some of you can relate to Wendy. Maybe it's not your son. Maybe it's your husband that you'd like. I couldn't resist. Wendy is frustrated, and the issue isn't an obedience issue. If she tells him to do it, he'll do it. But there's something missing. And Wendy recognizes that there's something missing. It's a character weakness in her son. She's feeling taken advantage of. Honor is what's missing in her son. Honor teaches a person to think of the other person's needs, to be thorough, to be thoughtful about the things you're doing. I want my children to be able to look at life situations from an honor perspective. What could I be doing in this situation to make life better for all of us? That's what we do when we teach honor to children. We get them to think about others, not just about themselves. It teaches children to be thorough and to be thoughtful, to respect mom's wishes, even when mom is not at home.
You'll know you need honor in your family when you see any of these things. Whining, complaining, bad attitudes. We're going to talk about all of those three tonight. But also things like nagging, like children putting each other down, mean words said in anger, unresolved conflict, manipulative techniques. You see, honor isn't just for kids. It's also for parents. And this week we're going to focus on kids, and that's why we've invited a number of children to join us. But also, next week we're going to talk about parents, because parents can do a lot to infuse honor into the network factor of their family. And we're going to talk about five honor-based parenting skills that you can develop in your family. But today we're going to be focusing on helping children to learn honor. And we just developed a quote just this week that goes like this. If you want your children to fly straight, teach them obedience. If you want them to fly high, teach them honor.
We hope that you're all starting to say, yeah, this makes sense. My family needs this. Because now we're going to get to the practical part. And we're going to take that definition that we've given you. Honor means treating people special, doing more than what's expected, and having a good attitude. We're going to take that definition apart, each of those three areas, and give you some practical ideas how to put that into practice, into your family, how to teach your children each one of those things.
Honor means to treat people special. It means doing more than what's expected, and it means having a good attitude. Now, we're going to take each one of those. Let's start with the first one, treating others special. From the time children are very young, they need to learn what honor means in very practical terms. They need to learn how to value other people and treat them special. So we're trying to teach kids that at a very young age so that they can learn these things. Now, often children will focus on the limitations that are placed on them or the weaknesses even that they see in their parents. We want to help children learn how to address themselves and behave in a certain way or respond in a certain way, even when parents have weaknesses, even when they're asked to do something they'd rather not do. Discipline means to teach, and honor can be part of the discipline process. And so we're going to talk about disciplining for rolling the eyes, for huffing the voice, for stomping the feet as they go down it. We're going to talk about those kinds of things because, see, we're going to bring honor into the discipline process. Because we want to teach children a very valuable concept about life. Now, you can teach it in a number of ways. Some people lecture a lot. And lecturing is not bad. But just because you have a desire to lecture doesn't mean your child has a desire to listen. It just doesn't work that way. You want to look for teachable moments. A teachable moment may be that when your child is coming and asking for permission for something. That's a great time to teach honor because they want something. And you can say, I'm sorry, would you please try that again? Let's try a little more honor this time in the way you're asking. It's a great opportunity. Teachable moment for family life is when a child wants something. A second one is when you're correcting a child. You can talk about honor and bring it into that situation. You want to look for teachable moments in life when you see dishonoring actions in the neighbors or in the people driving their car crazy or at this grocery store. You can talk about it as you see it in life. It's important also to model it in your family. You want to be careful. Even husbands and wives relating to each other with honor. Is that so hard? Maybe it is sometimes. That a husband is honoring his wife and a wife is honoring her husband. And that honor then is perpetuated and the children see it. Modeling is so important.
You know, children learn a lot from their parents in this whole area of modeling honor. One dad said, I've tried all kinds of techniques to get my children to eat with good manners. It just doesn't work. They still eat just like me. You know, we're role models for our children, whether we like it or not.
If you haven't been working on honor in your family, I guarantee you're going to see problems because they just happen. It's like a room. If you don't keep it clean, it just starts getting messy, right? And so it's very important for us to be working on it, house cleaning even in our family, so that we can be working on honor so that we don't see some of the things that often complicate our life. Now, you're going to say to yourself, well, where do I start? I mean, there's so many different things. I just want to tell you, start somewhere. You're going to hear a lot of ideas in the next few minutes. Just pick one. Start somewhere and watch honor start to develop in your family. You'll enjoy it. Your children will enjoy it. It'll start growing. Continue it. Allow it to grow and grow and grow, and you'll see it change all over the place. So watch it progress, but pick one small place and start it there. Now, how about if we share some ideas of ways that some families have implemented honors, tried to get honor going in their family, and share what other people have done. Can we do that?
Yeah. How do you teach children honor? Kelly, a mother of two preschoolers, said, I teach my children that one way to honor me is to listen with both eyes. They think that's funny, but it helps them understand that we show honor by looking at someone when they say their words.
This is a good one because it's small. It's real small. I mean, many of you are thinking of the biggies, you know. And we're going to talk about some of the biggies in a few minutes, but this is a great place to start. Just start with the looking at someone when you talk to them, because that's a way to show honor, even in conversation. Great place to start.
Another mom encouraged her children to notice the delight on people's faces when they opened Christmas presents. Then she used that fun observation to talk about giving small gifts of cooperation, appreciation, or encouragement during the day and watching the delight on people's faces.
The delight. One of the principles that we teach in our book about honor that you need to catch, you need to understand this, is that honor brings joy. The two go hand in hand. When you're honoring, then it brings joy. You know, this isn't an idea, by the way, that we developed. It actually came from the Bible. And the scriptures say, honor your father and mother so that you may enjoy long life on the earth. And so there's this, the honor and joy go together, very important concepts. And so we want to help children catch that, that picture. And so the delight seen on a parent's face is important. Sometimes a mom will say, well, I don't want to praise them for something they're supposed to do. That kind of, you know, there's some things I'm supposed to do too. And I really like when my wife says, hey, thank you, honey, for doing those things. You know, it just kind of reinforces in me the desire to continue doing it. Well, the same thing's true with children. We want to reinforce it. And that delight that is seen on your face is part of the reward that your child experiences when your child shows honor.
In another family, mom said, remember that your response to your children is important. When I see honor, I try and praise my children. When my son folds the towels like I asked and then does more by putting them away, my delight is his reward. Honor is a gift, the little extra unexpected act of kindness. I want my children to know I noticed. I want them to hear me brag about how they did more than what was expected. I want to take time to tell my children when I feel honored, that I'm pleased with what they're doing and how they're responding.
Sometimes parents focus just on the negative things that kids do, and that just perpetuates a negative cycle. So you want to be looking at the ways that some of them are showing honor. And there's been a number of examples just in our counseling with families. One boy was emptying the dishwasher in the morning just without being told. He was doing it. Another little boy, 5 years old, made his mom's bed in the morning because we're talking to him about this in counseling, giving him some suggestions and so on. And so he goes and does this. Whoa, mom's delighted. You see how it's just starting to reinforce this whole idea of honor. Honor is treating people special. And so we're trying to reinforce that in the mind of children.
In another family, they said, we target honor in the car. We discussed how honor applies to the question of who gets to sit in the front seat and how bickering is dishonoring. The car is one of those places where honor is needed the most. And this family took the idea of honor into the car and decided how they were going to arrange things so that people felt honored even in the car.
That reminds me of the time when the Taranskis and the Millers were on vacation together. We were actually in Kenya, East Africa. We had done some parenting classes there in Kenya, and we were on our way to Mombasa on the coast, a 10-hour trip with 11 of us in the car in a van with no air conditioning. Now, we knew that that had the potential to be a real dishonoring time, so we developed a game right at the outset. We called it the whoops and awe game. We identified five kinds of speech: arguing, boasting, whining, complaining, talking too much, and being bossy. Five kinds of speech, just because we'd seen those kinds of things in our family occasionally at times. And we thought those might creep into our trip down to Mombasa. And we said, if you see any of those kids, if you see anybody, parents or children, making any of those kinds of comments, then you can say, whoops. And then what we'll do is try to identify which one it was and give some suggestions of how that person could say it differently. I remember David Miller says, there are white rhinos and black rhinos in Africa. And Timothy Miller, his brother, says, no, there aren't. There's only white rhinos in Africa. And Ben said, whoops. We identified it as arguing. We suggested that maybe Timmy could say, I think there are only white rhinos in Africa. We also wanted to encourage positive speech. So compliments, appreciation, affirmation, and nice things would get an awe response. And Megan said, Dad, thanks for taking us on this trip. And I said, and that just motivated other people to also want to say kind things, even you, right? You're ready to say something kind so you can get the response. Ed and I are kind of characters. That's Joanne's husband. And so we were kept throwing in monkey wrenches into the plan. And I said, I am the best driver in all of Kenya, earning myself a hearty whoops. And that was for boasting. And they decided as they talked about it that it'd probably be best for me to be quiet, at least pretending to be humble. Ed then says to his son, David, that's a dumb idea. He got a whoops for arguing. And we went back and forth for a while. Now, at the end of our trip, 10 hours, we had to call off the game because we didn't want this intense analysis for the whole vacation. You know why? Because it's so amazing how quickly these things come out of our mouth. Dishonoring speech comes out so quickly. So we had a defined period of time. We were trapped in the car and we could identify all kinds of dishonoring speech just as a motivation for each of us to guard the things that we say and how we say them. The whoops and awe game.
One dad wanted to work on honor with his 7-year-old daughter. He realized that his daughter, Diane, was rather self-centered, always focusing on herself and wanting her own way. So he created this idea of a journal that he would go through with her, and they spent 2 weeks with a journal. And what he asked her to do is throughout the day identify times that people, either friends or other family members, were sad, mad, and glad. So it's three emotions, simple things. Look for sad, mad, and glad in life. This helped Diane to get outside of herself and be more aware of what was going on around her. And then each evening, Dad would sit down with Diane and talk through what she observed that day. And not only when did she see the sad, mad, and glad, but what could she do for that person to help encourage them? So maybe if her brother was mad, the best thing to do would be to just leave him alone, or maybe to ask a helpful question. If her friend is sad, maybe she wants to ask a question and then just listen empathetically. If mom is glad, maybe a good thing to do would be to listen to the story and enjoy that gladness with mom. But each day she was to identify sad, mad, and glad in someone else and then talk about it that evening with Dad. The journal idea lasted for 2 weeks, but it helped Diane to get outside of herself a little bit, thinking about others and what they might be thinking, feeling, responding, and how they were responding to life and how she then could respond to them in a more honoring way.
You know, this whole idea of honor has so many ramifications. I just appreciate my own relationship with God and the way God honors me. Honors me by sending Jesus Christ to die on a cross for me so that I could have a relationship with him. There's just this whole honoring perspective that God brings to my life that, you know, he gives me a spiritual gift. He allows me to be one of his part of his family. He treats me special. We can do the same thing with our kids. Our children can learn how to do that with us. Treating others special is the first part of this definition. Now, you can be creative with it. Look for different ways, as many parents have thought of new creative ways to deal with this part of the definition. It's a great place to start if you're going to be working on honor in your family, just looking for ways to treat people special. Now, the second part of the definition is doing more than what's expected. This is a great one. It's a great part of honor because it means seeing what needs to be done and doing it. If it's out, put it away. If it's dirty, clean it. If it's broken, then fix it. If you can't, then report it. All of these things are seeing what needs to be done and doing it, doing more than what's expected. That's part of what honor means.
I remember one wintry day, I was in my home and I looked out the front window and I saw that my trash can was blowing around in the wind. We had put it out on the street, trash was collected, and it was still out there blowing away. And so I called to my son, David, who was 8 years old at the time. He was upstairs watching a video. I said, David, could you come down and get the trash can in? It's blowing away. And so David came down. He went out, got the trash can in, pulled it up the driveway. And then instead of rushing back into his video, he stood and watched it for a minute to see if it was secure. Seeing that it was a little bit unstable yet, he moved it to a better place where it was no longer blowing. That's showing honor. It's being thorough and thoughtful about the things that you do.
The bathroom. A great place to work on honor, doing more than what's expected. We put a little sign by our bathroom light that said, is the bathroom ready for the next person? All we're trying to do is get our children to turn around and look on their way out the door. Because, you know, all we have to do is parents walk in and go, I can't believe you can leave a bathroom like this. So all we're trying to do is get them to turn around and look. And, of course, the first things on the list are the dirty clothes and hanging up the towel. But we're also asking them to do something extra. More than what's expected. Maybe clean the sink. Oh, no. Or wipe the counter or shut the cupboards. Or maybe even take the toilet paper and put it on the roller. Doing more than what's expected. Now, these things, by the way, are those kinds of things where you don't get much praise for these because nobody knows you did them. But then we tie this into the whole idea that where Jesus says he's talking about doing acts of kindness in secret, not blowing trumpets when you give to the needy, but doing it in secret, and your heavenly Father will reward you. You see, honor has so many benefits, and one of them is just doing more than what's expected is a tremendous benefit to the person who's even doing it.
See, obedience has to do with doing what you're asked. It's a behavior. If a child is obeying, they're doing what they're asked to do. Honor has to do with the heart level response, thinking about what mom is really intending, not just taking mom's words at face value, but what's the intent behind the words. Honor gets the child thinking more than just themselves, just doing the bare minimum, but doing what does mom really need done here? What's the real purpose here? What's going on? It helps a child to think more thoroughly and more completely about what's needed and about what others want and need. So obedience has to do with behavior, but honor is a heart level response that we're encouraging from children. And now one way to teach that is to include it in the instruction process, though. It's kind of hard to teach honor because it's like giving a gift. And how do you teach someone to give you a gift? But we can include it right in the instruction process. We just add something on. So if you ask your child to set the table, and the child sets a table, that's obedience. But you may ask them, I'd like you to set the table, and then when you're done, I want you to do one more thing. I don't care what it is. You think of it. You surprise me. Let me know when you're done, and I'll come back and check your work. See, now the child has to think of something else. It might be folding the napkins in a fancy way or pouring drinks for everyone or, you know, putting something on the table to decorate it. The child can choose. So that's not obedience anymore. Now that's honor. How can I make things a little bit more special for our family? Include it in the instruction process, but ask them to choose something that they want to do in addition. Then when you come back to check your work, wow, that's great. Your delight is their reward. It's like giving you a gift. If they've put a fancy decoration on the table, that's like a gift to you, and you want to be delighted when you see that. And that will just encourage the whole process of children thinking of others, adding to family life, and doing more than what's expected.
Some of you are probably saying, this honor stuff sounds great. I just wish I could get my kids to follow directions. Now, let me say, we've written a book about following directions. That's our first book. It's about obedience and creative ways to teach children how to do that. Now we're talking about something more than that. In fact, Joanne and I have been having this discussion the last week or so that goes like this. Do you have to have obedience down before you teach honor? At first we thought yes, because when we work in counseling, we'll often just focus on obedience and try to get that working, and then we'll add the honor, and people are so excited they go out and everything's positive. Because, see, obedience moves you from minus 10 to 0. Honor moves you from 0 to positive 10. But we find that some children get stuck in negative cycles of misbehavior. And the normal kinds of things that would sometimes work with other children, they're having a hard time working with these kids. In particular, as we work with the kids with attention deficit disorder or emotional problems, inability to control their anger, we see that these children sometimes get stuck in patterns. They don't seem to respond to the normal ways of disciplining that you read in all the books. They need a more targeted approach. And so we developed a whole series, a tape series on dealing with children that creates an environment and a way to relate to them and their learning. But we've also found that taking honor, bringing it back into that negative cycle, often can kick that child out of that negative cycle, because what they're doing is saying, how can I add to family life? Essentially, we'll sit around and we'll say, look, Dad brings some things to this family. Mom brings some different things to this family. And each of the children brings some things to this family to make it special. I would like you to choose one thing that you can do that's special for this family, that contributes to family life. Go ahead and think about it for a little bit. And I might give them ideas, you know, emptying the dishwasher, making the bed, baking some cookies, decorating the front door, putting little acts of kindness. I might suggest a bunch of things. Now, you go, whatever you want. You think and come back. And invariably, it's going to require work on your part, because if an 8-9-year-old comes back and says, I want to bake some cookies, you know you're going to have to spend some time in the kitchen. But when Dad comes home and he sees those cookies that his little boy has made, wow. You know, he's delighted. You better be after all this. You know, he's delighted, and that's the reward, see? And we're starting to help a child learn to get out of those negative cycles and move into some positive ones. Well, where are we in this definition here? We've talked about treating people special, doing more than what's expected. Now let's do the fun part here, dealing with a bad attitude. Let's talk about a bad attitude just for a minute, because a bad attitude comes from an angry spirit. As we work with children with anger, you imagine an onion, okay? And you, on the outside onion, the layer is physical violence, like hitting, kicking, slamming, biting, all those kinds of things. Physical violence. We help children understand anger and work with self-discipline skills to deal with the physical violence. When you peel that layer off, then what do you have? You have the mouth. And you have all the sarcasm, the hurtful words, sometimes just a grunt will do it and get everybody going. So the mouth becomes an area where we start working on mean words in a family. Once we peel that layer off, we're left with a very significant layer inside, and that's the bad attitude. Now, we have a tape, just one tape, that just deals with anger and helping families address that issue in their family. But I want you to know that a bad attitude comes from an angry spirit, because you need to deal with it. Some people think, well, it'll just go away eventually. It doesn't go away. Kids grow into those kind of problems. They don't grow out of them. And so we want to help them by dealing with a bad attitude in some significant ways. Anger is often revealed in a bad attitude, so we want to deal with it.
Let me ask you a question now. What does a bad attitude look like? What do you see in your family if someone has a bad attitude?
Rolling eyes.
Rolling eyes. Good.
Scowling.
Stamping.
Stamping. Snippy remark.
Good. Bad attitude. Okay.
Tossing the head.
Often it's body posture stuff. They're not going to come out and say it, but they're showing you with their body that they don't like what they're being asked to do. In fact, we say that there are three areas in life that often bad attitudes come out. When a child is corrected, when a child is given an instruction, or when a child is given a no answer. They're asking permission for something, or they want a snack. They want something from you, and you need to say no. Three areas where children sometimes have a bad attitude. Now, some of you may think, oh, no, my kids have bad attitudes in all of those areas. And that may be true. Sometimes it's just one area. They have a hard time being corrected. Sometimes it's all of them. It really doesn't matter. What we want to do is target it and break it down for children so they understand what's going on. They don't understand their own emotions. They don't understand the whole processes of what's going on in the family. But we can, as parents, teach them by breaking it down and explaining it and say, you know, I see that we're having a problem here when I give you instruction. It seems that every time I give you an instruction, you roll your eyes. Let's talk about this a little bit and address it head on. Now, I put a sign up on the wall in my kitchen that says there are three opportunities for a good attitude: when corrected, when given instruction, or when given a no answer. And if I'm having a problem with a particular child, I may say to them, hey, listen, I need to ask you to do something, or I may not even start that way. What I might say is, you've got an opportunity now for a good attitude, because I'm getting them ready. I'm preparing them and say, okay, I need to give them instruction. I want them ready for it. And we're focusing on it directly so they see it coming, we see it coming, and we can work on it. Three areas that we can be working on.
A bad attitude is a big problem. And so you want to take it in small parts. Joanne just gave you three different scenarios in which this good attitude is an opportunity for children. Just take one of them. Just sit down with a child and say, look, I've noticed that when I give you an instruction, you tend to roll your eyes or grumble as you walk off to do it, or you say no, or whatever it might be. And I'd say, that's not a good attitude. That's not honoring. And so what we want to do here is make some changes in the way, because we want you to learn honor. Honor will make you successful as an adult. Not just here as a child, but as an adult, you need to learn this, and there are going to be many opportunities for you in life when someone asks you to do something and you don't want to do it. But you just need to learn how to respond. And so what do you want them to do? It's important that you know, as a parent, what you want them to do, not just what you don't want them to do. I would suggest that you have your child say, okay, Mom, or okay, Dad. Not, okay, Mom. We got a bad attitude, right? Okay, so do you see we're trying to discipline a child, help them learn to respond in the right kind of way. As we take it apart, if your child's having a problem being corrected, what is the response you want them to have when they're being corrected? Maybe you want them to say they're sorry if they've done something wrong, or maybe you want them to say okay. Whatever response you're looking for, tell them what it is. You don't just want to tell children what not to do, get rid of that bad attitude, but teach them how to respond. So take this big problem of bad attitude and deal with it in pieces. That's what we do in our coaching with families. We'll take it apart and deal with it in pieces so that children are working on just one part of that for this week. They're successful there, and then we add another part and another part until we've addressed a bad attitude in a number of different scenarios in family life.
Correcting for bad attitude is very important because it's at this level that we're dealing with the heart directly. And if we don't address it, it's only going to get worse. The anger is there and it's continued to grow and fester and come out in selfish or disrespectful behaviors if not addressed as a bad attitude. So we want to focus on it with our children, talk about it, hit it directly. You know, if your child is having a bad attitude, you may need to say, listen, I don't like the attitude I'm seeing. I want you to go to your room until you settle down. Come back and we'll talk about it when we can talk without you showing me with your body that you're unhappy. You do address it straight on, deal with it. If you don't address the attitude, it's only going to get worse. So you want to continue the discipline process until the attitude is addressed, the attitude is changed, and then you know that you've gotten to the bottom of it and it's not continuing to grow.
You're looking for maybe ask some other questions about a bad attitude. One mom said, my son was having a real difficult time during the day until I started enforcing a bedtime. I realized he wasn't getting enough sleep. So when I started enforcing a bedtime, then I saw things change with him during the day. Another dad said, I realized that my daughter had a problem persevering. Whenever a little bit of resistance came, she'd start having a bad attitude. And we saw that we had a character weakness. A lot of times a bad attitude is a result of a character weakness, like a lack of thoroughness or being demanding or selfishness or some other character issue that needs to be addressed.
As parents, I think we get frustrated when our children resist our discipline and we wonder why they're resisting. It's like we expect them to be grateful for our discipline, but it's not going to happen. And our children sometimes give us the bad attitude then when they're being disciplined. And unfortunately, parents get frustrated then sometimes and they come on angry or harsh. And that just creates a dishonoring cycle. So we want to, as parents, realize we're going to get some resistance as we discipline our children. We're teaching them, we're training them. That even in the most respectful, honoring families, correction is necessary. Children are not always going to respond to that in a gracious way, though.
Some parents are surprised by that. It's if they expect that their children are going to want to obey.
It's as if we expect our children to say, hey, thanks, Dad, for sending me to my room. I really appreciate the limits you set for me.
Or thanks, Mom, for making me clean up my room or make my bed. The children aren't going to respond that way naturally, are they? Wouldn't you just like it if just one time your child would say,
hey, this broccoli sure is good. Could I have some more?
Or what about this?
It's okay that the TV's broken. I'm sure we can be creative ourselves.
What about this one?
Oh, Dad, don't blame Bobby. It was all my fault.
Children are not going to naturally respond that way, are they? We need, as parents, to expect resistance. If we don't expect resistance, if we expect our children to be grateful, and if we expect them to always respond positively to discipline, we're going to be upset. We're going to be dishonoring with our children. So it's important for us to address our own expectations. It's actually part of the job, the resistance. We can expect it. We're parents. And so it's part of what we're called to do as parents.
How many of you have a problem in your family with whining and complaining? How many of you have children who also have a problem with whining and complaining? Whining and complaining is common in families. We say that whining and complaining is a manipulative technique children use to trick their parents into doing what they want. So we want to address that. We want to call them on it. One mom said to her daughter, I can tell by the high-pitched voice that you're trying to trick me. Sorry, the answer is still no. We want to address it. We don't need to get angry with our children, but we want to let them see what they're doing and if their tricks don't work. Whining and complaining is not an honoring way to communicate.
Now, parents sometimes wonder, well, what do we do with children who don't want to do what we ask them to do? Should we dialogue with them? Is that the best thing? Should we try and talk them into obeying? Should we just demand that they obey? How do we handle that situation? Children don't know what to do. They start whining and complaining, but parents often don't know what to do either. So we're going to share with you two choices. We say that when a child doesn't agree with what they're being asked to do, they don't want to comply, they have two healthy choices. And in fact, these are the same choices that adults have. Because adults find themselves in that situation sometimes too. Maybe you don't agree with what your boss is asking you to do or what your landlord has said, and you're frustrated about that. You have two healthy choices, and children have two healthy choices, and that's what we're going to share with you now. Two choices that children have. We say the first one is obey first, and then we'll talk about it. Focuses on obedience, teaching children submission. That's important for them. The second choice is the wise appeal. And that's an honoring way to communicate to parents when you don't agree with what you're being asked to do.
When the children learn the first one, they can sometimes do the second. Let's talk about that first one. Obey first, and then we'll talk about it. One of the problems that children have is sometimes they don't want to do what a parent has asked them to do. And as parents, we're wrestling with two different ideas at the same time. On the one hand, we want our children to be happy. We want them to think for themselves. We want to honor their agenda. We want them to want to do whatever they're being asked to do. On the other hand, we want them to learn how to give up their agenda for someone else. We want them to be able to follow directions. And so we're playing these two different ideas together. This first technique emphasizes the first one, which is obey first, and then we'll talk about it. When little Brian's climbing up the chair and getting on the counter, I may say, Brian, you need to get down. But I want, no, you need to obey first, and then we'll talk about it. Now, when Brian gets down, then we can talk about it and dialogue about how he might get whatever's on the counter instead of climbing on the chairs, because we don't climb on the chairs. So I may say to Carl, Carl, I want you to go put on your pajamas. But I don't want to go to bed. No, I'm sorry. Go obey first, and then we'll talk about it. You see, we're emphasizing following directions first, and then we'll talk all you want. But sometimes there's a time when we obey first and then talk about it.
Now, to some parents, obey first, then we'll talk about it. It sounds like blind obedience. And we don't want that. We've all heard stories of people that are led off by cultish leaders in doing things that are not good because they haven't questioned the instruction. And we want our children to be able to evaluate instructions and understand if this is right or wrong for them. But evaluating instructions is an advanced skill. First, they need to learn how to follow instructions, how to submit to the authority of their parents. Once they've learned that, then maybe down the road we can teach them how to evaluate instructions. But it's important for them to learn how to put their own agendas aside for someone else. Otherwise, we end up with very selfish people, children or even adults who can't follow under someone else's leadership. It's important for them to learn how to submit it. So we teach that first. We say obey first, and then we'll talk about it. Now, children need to learn that the consequences of not following instructions is that they have fewer choices. It's immaturity. And if you ask your child to go pick out something to wear and get dressed, and they dawdle and play and they don't get dressed, well, they have fewer choices then, okay? These are the clothes you're going to put on. You need to put them on now. They have fewer choices because they're not being responsible with that privilege. And the same is true just in life. Children need to first learn how to submit under their parents' authority, and then they can learn some other skills.
Now, parents, in an attempt to honor their children, often do a lot more dialoguing than is beneficial for their kids. What they're trying to do is to talk their children into want to obey what they've said. Inadvertently, these parents teach their children selfishness. They teach their children the thought that they can evaluate every request and decide whether they want to obey it or not. And we know that that's not how life works for us, even as adults. In the Bible, there are a number of examples where God asked people to act first and then talk about it afterwards. Abraham was to sacrifice his son Isaac, and he didn't understand why until after the fact when God revealed what was going on. Philip was in Samaria with a revival, and God told him to go out into the desert, and Philip didn't know why, but when he got out there, he met the Ethiopian eunuch who was to become a believer. Peter did something similar when he was told to go and eat in a Gentile home, and as a Jew, he would never do that. But he was told to do that because, not understanding why, when he got there, he realized that God wanted to bring salvation to the Gentiles. So sometimes God asks us, too, to obey first, and then we'll talk about it. We sometimes don't understand everything that's going on, and we respond first and then understand later.
Now let's talk about the second choice, the wise appeal. We say that privilege and responsibility go together. And once a child is able to be responsible to use the obey first and then we'll talk about it. They're doing well with that response. Then we give them the privilege of the wise appeal, which is a second response, the second choice they have when they don't agree with what they're being asked to do or they don't like the instruction. Now, sometimes when we teach this, we have audience, we have a lot of teens in the audience, and we'll say to them, okay, teens, now's time we're going to teach you how to disagree with your parents. And the parents say, what are we going to hear now? But that's what we want to do now, is we want to teach children a way to talk to their parents, to appeal to them, and still be respectful. We call it the wise appeal. So we're going to show you a little story again here. I'm the parent again, and this is my son, Cal. He's 15 years old.
Boy, I am tired. I have had a hard day at school today, and I am glad to be home. I just want to sit down and listen to my CDs and rest.
Hey, Cal, I'm glad you're home from school. I'd like you to go out and mow the lawn.
This is a problem about to happen. Do you see that mom and teen both have an idea about what I'm going to do with my time? Now, this could be played out in a number of different ways. Let's just try one of them. Mom, mow the lawn, not now!
Now, you just listen here, young man. Too much from you, but today you need to mow the lawn, so I want you to go out there right now and mow the lawn.
Did you see what just happened to my mom? She became more entrenched in her position. Is there a way that I can respond to my mom that would solicit a different response out of her? Let's try that one more time.
Hey, Cal, I'm glad you're home from school. I'd like you to go out and mow the lawn.
Mom, I understand you want me to mow the lawn because it's getting long. I have a problem with that because I didn't get much sleep last night. I had a hard day at school today, and I was looking forward to coming home and listening to my CDs and rest. So could I please mow the lawn in a couple hours?
You didn't sleep well last night, huh? That's too bad.
No.
Well, as long as you mow in 2 hours, that's fine with me. Okay.
Some of you are saying, this sounds like a cross between the Brady Bunch and Leave It to Beaver. We teach this to preschoolers, okay? This is a formula, and it's on your paper, on your sheet there. It goes like this. I understand you want me to. I have a problem with that because, so could I please? It's a very important way for children to learn to address their parents. It's a valuable tool that they'll use continually in life. And so what we're going to do is go back through the wise appeal one more time and take it apart so that you can see the different parts and how they work. Mom, I understand you want me to mow the lawn because it's getting long.
The first part of the wise appeal is important because the child is expressing understanding of what the parent wants and needs. This is real important because if we as parents feel understood, we're more likely to listen to anything else, to negotiate, to compromise, to make some adjustment. Because first we feel understood, the child is expressing back to the parent what the parent wants. Second part.
But I have a problem with that because I didn't get very much sleep last night, had a hard day at school today, and I was expecting to come home and listen to my CDs and rest.
The second part of the wise appeal is important because now the child is expressing to the parent his predicament. The parent is getting more information about what's going on in the child's life. The parent is getting to understand a little bit more about the child. It's done in an honoring and a respectful way. Once the parent understands the child a little more, the parent may be willing to accommodate.
So could I please mow the lawn in a couple hours?
Okay, this third part of the wise appeal is very important because it's not just a complaint, but it's focusing on a solution. The child isn't just complaining, but they're coming up with a creative alternative, a way to solve the problem, taking mom's intent in mind, the child's problem, putting it together, having a creative solution. The parent is hearing a suggestion, not just a complaint now. When parents hear this, it's like the parent and the child are now working together on the same side to solve the problem, and parents are much more likely to listen and to accommodate when they're approached in this way.
You may be saying, my kids aren't going to do this, and they may not, unless you teach them. Let me tell you how we teach this to preschoolers. We do this fill-in-the-blank thing. You want to try the wise appeal? I've already said no to you, but if you want to try the wise appeal, I'll listen. Okay, I'll start it out. Mom or Dad, I know you want me to. And they'll say, I don't know. We say, well, then you're not ready to do the wise appeal. Ask me some questions. What is it that I'm trying to get you to do? And then also as children get older, we ask, and why? What does mom want and why? What does dad want and why? Fill in the blank. When you know that, let me know. Think about it. Ask me some questions and I'll tell you. Okay, they get that down. We say, great, let's try it again. Dad, I understand you want me to because... Okay, fill in the blank. Okay, good. Then, the next part is... But I have a problem with that because... No, they never have a problem with this part. I mean, they know why they want to do what they want to do. And they can tell you upteen reasons, you know, why they want to do whatever. So that's great. Good. You did great on that part. Then the last part is, so could I please? I don't know. Well, fine. Think about it for a minute. You've got to develop a solution that takes into account the things that we've talked about. What do you think you could suggest that you would still be able to do part of what you want maybe and it would take into account my concerns? And now, as we work with children in this way, they learn how to do this. Even at preschoolers, 4 or 5-year-olds can learn this. And it's certainly valuable as they get older and start doing this as they get to be teenagers and starting to appeal to authority. My son now is in college, my oldest son. And I talk to him regularly. He just called a couple days ago, and he's telling me how he's developing a strategy for the school. He's in this college of about 600 students. He's got an idea of a problem that exists in the school, and he's taking a proposal that he's written. He spent 6 hours on a Friday night a couple weeks ago to develop this proposal because he's taking it to the administration. It's like a wise appeal. Here's an idea of how I think that we could do better in this area of the school. I'm going, boy, that's amazing. This is fun to watch him try to be honoring in the way he presents. Not a complaint, not criticizing, but bringing a solution to the powers that be at the school, the college that he's in.
The wise appeal is an adult skill. Now, too many adults haven't learned the wise appeal, and they resort to complaining, passive resistance, becoming part of the problem. The wise appeal teaches children, even at a young age, how to become part of the solution and not just part of the problem. And that's what we like to do. We like to teach children adult skills, break it down so a young child can understand and then grow into the solution so they're successful adults knowing how to interact in the world, even if they disagree with what's going on. So we teach even young children the wise appeal because it's an adult skill that we want them to learn. So if you ask your 7-year-old to go clean up the playroom because it's time to go run errands, your child may say, hey, I understand you want me to clean up the playroom because it's time to run errands. I have a problem with that because I just got out my train set. Could I please leave it out so I can play with it when we get home? It's a reasonable solution. Now, the parent may be able to say, okay, that makes sense. You just got the train track out. I didn't realize that. Sure. Let's leave it out. You play with it when we get back. Or the parent may need to say, no, they need that room cleaned up because when we get back home, we're doing some other things, and that's not going to work. The child who uses the wise appeal needs to be able to accept no for an answer. If you can't accept no for an answer, we go back to the first alternative, obey first, and then we'll talk about it. But children who are able to accept that no sometimes have the privilege of using the wise appeal. Now, sometimes children will use the wise appeal as a manipulation. Cal may not really intend doing the lawn in 2 hours. He's just trying to get out of the work. Okay, that's not acceptable either. Because when you use the wise appeal, it's like a contract between the parent and the child. We're making an agreement. We have a contract together now, and it's going to be followed through. If the child is not being responsible, they're not following through what they've agreed to, they lose the privilege of using the wise appeal. I'm sorry, we're not going to have any more wise appeals for a week because you're just not being responsible with that. You're abusing the privilege. Let's go back to obey first, and then we'll talk about it. But when children are responsible with it, the wise appeal gives them an honoring way to appeal to the parent, share some more information about what's going on in their life so that you can make a determination whether that's appropriate or not.
The wise appeal is illustrated in the Bible in people like Daniel and Esther and Nehemiah, who each had problems and they had to go to the king. Part of the reason they got positive answers is because of the way that they went to their authority to make a request. A wise appeal is something that we can use in a variety of different contexts, and it's something that parents can use. It's an adult skill you use for the rest of your life. Because a wise appeal is a way to address a problem without whining and complaining. It's a mature person who can take on the wise appeal and learn how to use it. Well, we've said that honor is treating people special, doing more than what's expected, and having a good attitude. We're trying to give you all kinds of ideas of ways you can implement honor in your family. We've focused on children today. Next time, we're going to focus on parents, and then we're going to talk about this hidden fabric in your family, because you're saying probably now, I'm not sure I know how to do this. We're going to give you specific ideas in that third session about how to look at this. But, you know, it's a self-perpetuating attitude that happens in your families, it starts to grow. I remember one time I came home, Josh, my oldest son, was home by himself, and he had made me a lunch. Now, this was no ordinary lunch. This was one of those cloth napkins, fancy lunches that came out in courses. And so he brought out the courses, and, you know, I had a nice napkin and a fancy glass, and Josh was honoring me, and I was delighted. And he was having fun honoring me, and I was having fun being honored. And it just perpetuated this whole attitude about the way that we treat each other in our family. It's honor. Honor can revolutionize family life. We believe it's very significant. It's not easy to catch. And a lot of times parents get stuck in the mundane day-to-day stuff and they don't teach their children how to fly high. And so we're going to be working on that for the next couple of weeks.
This concludes this session. Together, Scott Taransky and Joanne Miller have written a book entitled Say Goodbye to Whining, Complaining, and Bad Attitudes in You and Your Kids. This practical book is presented in an easy-to-read style and helps you develop honor in your family. Effective Parenting is a nonprofit organization committed to strengthening the family through teaching, counseling, and producing materials for parents and children. To learn more about the work of Effective Parenting, give us a call at area code 609-771-8002. Or you can call 1-800-771-8334. Or visit us on the web at www.effectiveparenting.org. We pray that God will bless your family as you apply the things taught in these sessions.